The Fan on Demand.
Tennis, anyone? This is Aces with your hosts Roger Lajoie and Tom Tebbett of Tennis Canada. Sportsnet Radio, The Fan.
Good evening, everybody, and you are listening to Aces on Sportsnet Radio, The Fan 590. I'm Roger Lajoie. Nice to be with you. Tom Tebbett is on the line with us from Montreal tonight. Of course, the Rogers Cup getting underway in Montreal and in Toronto. We'll be with you the next three Thursday nights. John McEnroe among our guests on the program tonight. Stick around, folks. We got a great show for you. Tom's going to give us his trivia question. We got another great prize courtesy of Tennis Canada. And speaking of Tennis Canada, this segment of Aces is brought to you by Tennis Canada. To get up-to-the-minute tennis news and scores, visit lovemeansnothing.ca. Tennis is spoken here. And joining us on the line, as I said, co-host Tom Tebbett from Montreal. Tom, how are you, sir?
I'm good, Rog, in the Montreal office here, looking at from my palatial estate at the back of Mount Royal.
Oh, what a lovely view, top or bottom in Mount Royal. Montreal's a beautiful city. Well, enjoy, Tom. Great to have you on the line from there. Hey, Montreal, great city, tennis town, and a great city for major sporting events. I grew up there, Tom, and I'll tell you what, people can say what they want about spectator sports in Montreal, but the Grand Prix, the tennis, they love that stuff in the city.
They support the Alouettes, obviously, and actually in the summertime here, it's not so much even the sports. It's, you know, the Just for Laughs Festival, the Jazz Festival. I think they have a fireworks festival. That just every week it's something, and next week this is big time here in Montreal. People are really keen on it, and I was just up there at the tennis center, and no less than Mr. Rafael Nadal has arrived, and I think he's having a hit, and Roger Federer was supposed to have a hit tonight. He's in town, but I think he decided not to, so things are really getting into swing here.
Well, we have a big show to get into swing, too. And right off the bat, Tom, I know you talked with John McEnroe. Tell us a little bit about the conversation before we play it here.
Well, I mean, he's probably the most talented player I've ever seen, a real genius on the tennis court, maybe not the most diplomatic guy, certainly far from the most diplomatic guy, but a very bright man, and it was really fun to talk to him. And, you know, we had a fair range of subjects we went through, and hopefully the people will find it interesting.
There ain't no doubt will, and now let's get right to it because we've got a busy show still to come up, but Tom Tebbett in conversation with John McEnroe.
John McEnroe, welcome to Aces.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
You've been called the best 52-year-old tennis player ever in the game. What do you think about that?
Well, I think that's a good thing. You know, I work at it regularly. I like to be in shape. I sometimes wish I'd worked as hard before as I do now, but that's another story for another interview. But and I take pride in it. I think I make better decisions, not only on a tennis court, but in general when I'm in shape. So I think that when we talk about tennis being a game for life, I think it sets a good example, and it's still fun to compete.
What are the things you can do and cannot do compared to when you were at your best in your heyday?
I mean, the type of game that I play, that aggressive style where I was making things happen and trying to come to net and force the issue is more difficult because obviously the ball's being hit harder, but more importantly, my body doesn't react the way it needs to. And because guys do hit it harder, it's something that would be even more critical now. So the recovery period after a long match is tougher. I can hit the ball with as much pace, maybe more at times. I just don't know where I'm hitting it. So that's an issue. Placement was more at a premium back in the heyday of the wood racket. So most of the things I can do, it's just that to do it consistently. But the biggest thing is the focus and the concentration. I think people lose sight of how important that is in our sport, and that your mind wanders a lot more as you get older than when you think it was the only thing that was mattered.
I think you're the most talented player, most gifted player, the best shot maker, most varied shot maker I've ever seen in all the years I've been covering tennis. I was just wondering, obviously ruling yourself out, who would you say has impressed you the most over your career as being able to play like that with a real variety of shots and a great deal of talent?
Well, I look at Federer. I mean, to me, he's the most beautiful player I've ever seen. I sometimes wish when I watch him that he took advantage of his attributes a little bit more, particularly when he plays the guys that cause him problems. You know, for example, his ability to play at net. I think he's gotten away from that more and more as his career has gone on, and I think that's the very thing that would help him beat a Nadal more often now or Djokovic now. And so it's somewhat frustrating to watch him because you feel like he's capable of doing more with this front court game. I'm very impressed with Nadal, though, because when he came on the scene, he looked to me like a clay court player, and he's become a great all-court player, perhaps one of the best volleyers in the game. So, yeah, he plays with a lot better touch than you would think for when you watch him play, the way he bludgeons the ball. Murray is probably the guy closest to sort of the style I played in terms of sort of mixing up different looks and different spins and giving you off-speed pitches and keeping you off-balance. However, he's also someone who's lived predominantly in the baseline, unlike myself. So there's very few guys after Rafter, Edberg, that I see that play the type of style that I play, and you wonder at times whether you're ever going to see it again. But, you know, I'm optimistic that someone's going to come along and sort of had watched the tapes of one of us when they grew up and really make an impact in the game, and then you'll see it come more into vogue.
Federer has a lot of fans, and, you know, people are concerned that he could be in decline. What do you think are the physical and mental obstacles he faces to trying to stay at the very top?
Just motivation and is the biggest one. He's got other things in his life, his little kids, and so the focus isn't as great. He's broken every record, so it's incredible that he loves it as much as he still does. The problem, I think, is he's a bit stubborn. That's part of what made him so great, but he's been seemingly unwilling to alter his game against a Nadal when he needs to. And so that's caused problems for him, particularly on clay, but even on some other surfaces. So it'll be interesting to see in this last couple of years how much he's willing to alter his game, or if he's just going to sort of keep playing the same way that he has been playing, and then hope that I don't think that he can still improve that way. I think he's got to make some moves, and he's got to be really careful about his schedule, because I think that it was good for tennis, but yeah, he played a lot of tennis, and I think that eventually, even for him, it's going to catch up to you to some degree, so he's going to have to pick his spots better.
Rackets and strings have evolved, obviously. I was just wondering, how have you been able to incorporate the changes in rackets and changes in strings into your game?
Well, not as well as I'd like. I mean, I think that the game itself is one of the reasons why you don't see guys coming to net is the technology has made bigger advances for baseline players than it has for players in net. The rackets and particularly the strings are very stiff, and so you need to take big swings, which is against the style that I played. And in order to get the type of spin that you see now, most players are using lighter rackets and swinging harder. That seems to be the way things are going now, at least. So they've given up a little bit of the feel of the ball, the touch, for more power and spin. So I think you see some players trying to find that middle ground. The better ones are better able to play at net, but it seems to be a place where players, for the most part, are either allergic to coming to or feel somewhat afraid of approaching the net. They like their chances better on the baseline. So you see guys, even at Wimbledon, which was be unheard of, two guys playing, slugging it out from the baseline. So certainly it's a shocking change from 10 years ago when you saw Sampras playing even Ivanišević. So I think that in a way it's interesting to see it, but I think it's swung too far the other direction. So I don't know what, if anything, they'll do as far as changing the rules or making it to encourage players perhaps to become more all-court players. You look at Wimbledon and you see the area around the net, and it looks like no one's gone up there the entire 2 weeks. So it will be interesting to see what happens the next 5 or 10 years.
Nowadays, John, people talk about Nadal as a real physical phenomenon. Back in the day, you were there, I was there. Bjorn Borg was an amazing physical phenomenon as well. How would you compare the two? And do you think people sometimes underestimate Borg, how great he was that way?
I think that's true. I think Borg was the Nadal of our time. He was the greatest athlete that had ever been on a court at that time. He was the fastest, I think, faster than Nadal. Nadal's a little stronger, but Borg laid the groundwork for a guy like Rafa. And actually, his style of play was very similar. His ability to adapt at Wimbledon was very similar to Rafa. He became a much better server. He learned how to volley. That forehand, the Lasso-like forehand, Borg was the first guy I remember doing that. So it's very easy and it's apt to make comparisons. And because of the way the game was played then and because of the courts were so much different and the balls were heavier and conditions were slower, it looks like some of us old guys were playing a bit of like slow motion. So then people tend to have a tendency to write you off faster. But I think they'd be making a big mistake because I think Borg would be an incredible champion at this time as well. And he would still intimidate people with his speed and fitness. He was a guy who played the entire career, never got tired in a match. So that should tell you something about how fit he was. So I think the players themselves would know better and give him his due.
John, over your career as a broadcaster, how would you say that your style has changed? How have you evolved?
I think that I don't think I've changed that much. I think that what I've tried to do from the beginning, I try to copy or I remember listening to Vitas Gerulaitis, my late great friend, and thinking if I ever did something like this, I wanted to be like him because it seemed like he obviously knew the game. And he was able to sort of analyze what was happening on the court, and he'd been there. But more importantly, seemed to be having fun doing it and not taking himself too seriously. And so I always try to approach a match like that and to realize that the main thing is and the focus should be on the players that are out there and that you're there sort of complimenting them. I always said, you know, my mom made a great chocolate cake. And it was good with or without the icing, but perhaps if the nice vanilla icing was on, it'd be a little bit better. And that's how I view the broadcasting. And sometimes when you get a decent reputation, you have a tendency to talk too much. So I think in a way, I take most pride in sometimes letting matches play out for themselves and great matches and try to pull back and say less because I want to let the players, let them speak for themselves. And I think that I take pride in not saying something at times as much as I do when I need to.
John, you were 82-3 in 1984, which is amazing. And Djokovic, now it's the month of August, he's 48-1. Just how incredible has his performance been this year?
Well, I think it's even better than what I did because he won the major, the Australian, at the beginning of the year. Mahars was at the end of the year. I'm not even playing that. But right away, there's the competition stiffer, obviously. And in this day, all the top players play, which was not the case back, or was just starting to be the case when I played. And also because the game was spread out even more, I think the top players were playing different events more often than not. So I think what he's done, because they have these Masters Series events where most, if not all, the top players play, it's even more difficult to be able to win as consistently as he's had and to beat these top guys because we didn't play each other maybe as much. And also, finally, the depth of the game is better. So you can't feel like you can just walk in there first couple of rounds perhaps as easily as it was back in my day. Not that it was easy, but because it was becoming more difficult. But it's even more difficult now. So I think it's pretty remarkable what he's been doing.
John, in 1973, when Riggs played Billie Jean King, she was 29 and Riggs was 55. And I know a lot of Riggs' buddies were pretty disappointed that he lost to Billie Jean. He thought he should have beaten her. John McEnroe, 52, against Serena Williams, 29. What do you think would happen?
Well, I'd like to think I'd do well. certainly the game is, with the advent of the power and their graphite and the rackets themselves having so much more oomph than they did before, it makes people perhaps even think even more than then that someone like Serena could do well against an old-timer like myself or some of the other male players on the tour, because I hear people talking about what would she be ranked if she played the men's tour. So these are the type of questions that people like to bandy about. I still like my chances.
Final question. What should the fans here in Toronto expect from you and Andre and Jim and Michael in about 9 days when you play here?
Well, I think that Well, competitors at heart, and you want to put on a good show, particularly you don't play at a place very often or haven't played there in a long time. You want to impress. And so it's a combination of you want to win the last point, but you want to feel like people got their money's worth. And after all, we're just trying to be a part of a bigger event that's there. But, you know, I'm excited. This is difficult for me to play these guys. These guys have me quite a bit younger than I am, so it makes it that much more difficult. But hopefully we can showcase what we have left, and people will come away impressed.
Well, John, thank you for spending some time with us today.
Tom, no problem. Take care.
Nice to hear from John McEnroe. You know he'll be competitive when he's playing. There's no other way John McEnroe knows how to play the game. Tom Tebbit and Roger Lajoie. It's Aces on Sportsnet Radio, the Fan 590. And again, this segment of Aces was brought to you by Tennis Canada. To get up-to-the-minute news and scores, visit lovemeansnothing.ca. Tennis is spoken here. Daniela Hunchakova in conversation with Tom Tebbit coming up in minutes right here on Sportsnet Radio, the Fan 590.
Grand Slam tennis coverage. This is Aces with your hosts Roger Lajoie and Tom Tebbit of Tennis Canada. Sportsnet Radio, Fan 590.
Aces on Sportsnet Radio, Fan 590 continues. Roger Lajoie, Tom Tebbit with you. Questions for Tom are welcome. We'll take him in our final segment of the program. Roger at fan590.com. Roger at fan590.com. Email in now. We already got a couple, actually. Email in. Tom will answer your questions in our final segment. We'll also have that great prize, Rogers Cup tickets and Wilson tennis balls. What a prize it is. Tom has a new question coming up after our final break as well. So stick around. All that is coming up on Aces tonight. This segment of Aces is brought to you by Corona and the Corona Pack. Pick up your six packs of new Corona Extra limited edition bottles at the LCBO in the beer store. Visit findyourbeach.ca to vote for your favorite bottle. You were a busy man, Tom. Not only did you have one of the greats from the past, but the greats from the future and, well, upcoming past, Daniela Hunchakova, too. Tell us about it.
Well, Daniela Hunchakova is 28 years old. She ranks as high as number 5 in the world. She's been in the semifinals of the Australian Open. She's won 4 titles, and really, I think, Raj, really one of the nicest players you'd find on the women's tour, real, just maybe too nice almost, and a lovely player to watch as well. She's got just hits the ball very well, plays very aggressively, so she's really exciting to watch.
And here's Tom's conversation with Daniela right now.
Daniela Hunchakova, welcome to Aces.
Thank you very much.
I'm going to start with something that maybe you're not aware of. Your very first Grand Slam tournament was the Australian Open in 2001. And you played every single Grand Slam through 2010, so you played all 40 in the decade. And there is a male player who also did that. Do you know who that is on the men's tour?
Oh, my God.
He started in January 2001, and he played all 40 Grand Slams till 2010. Unfortunately, he missed the French Open this year. So he has to be roughly the same age as you are.
Oh, gosh. Same age as me. Oh, gosh, this is tough.
I'll give you a hint.
Yes?
He's
is
European.
He from Europe? European, okay.
And he's from a Latin-speaking country.
Huh, would it be maybe Feliciano Lopez?
You're getting close.
Verdasco?
No.
Keep
going.
Was there?
Sorry?
So he's from Spain, obviously.
Right.
Who else is there? Well, he didn't miss it. Oh, gosh, I don't know.
No, it's Tommy Robredo.
Oh, yeah, that's right, yeah.
I was noticing you, both of you played all 40 Grand Slams starting in the beginning of the decade. Luckily,
wow.
you're still going, and I guess you're at 43 now, and your former doubles partner, Sugiyama, finished with 62. Do you think you can reach 62?
That. Yeah. Oh, well, that's going to be a tough one to beat, but we'll see. I'll do my best. We see. As long as I'm healthy and I'm enjoying it, why not?
Yeah. You're very well behaved on the tennis court. What's the worst thing you've ever done?
Oh, well, I used to break rackets big time when I was young. I always needed to get the frustration out of me on the court. Now I know that, you know, that's not going to help me. So it's better just to try to stay positive all the time. And, you know, once the point is over and you do the mistake, there's nothing you can do about it. So why to worry about it? It's better to just focus all the energy for the next point and think about how I can win the match.
Is there any one thing or any one person who helped you change your attitude?
Well, obviously, you know, all the coaches I work with, they definitely helped me in this department a lot. And, you know, I'm so thankful for all the people I have had in my team. But, you know, at the end of the day, I think it's up to me how I managed to deal with it myself inside. And I'm very proud how I was able to change this around. And these days I'm really enjoying the tennis more than ever before.
Why would that be?
I don't know. I just got the experience. I know how to appreciate everything much more, and I'm more aware of that. You know, it is a big privilege to do what I'm doing, and I'm one of the luckiest persons in the world to wake up every morning and do something that I enjoy so much, and I think that's a huge privilege in life.
I was noticing in your Grand Slam record, you basically have about the same record at all four Grand Slams, obviously a little bit better at Wimbledon, a little bit better at the Australian Open. Does it make that much difference to you what surface you're playing on?
Not at all. No, that's one thing that I've been always proud of, that I can really basically play on every surface. I did struggle maybe a little bit on clay before, but now after this year, obviously beating Caroline and having a good French Open showed me that I can play on any surface. So that's one thing that next year I really want to focus, especially on the clay court season, and try to do there the best I've ever done. So that's going to be my main goal.
There's some people who are very interested in technical parts of tennis. When you go back to when you started on the Pro Tour, would mm-hmm. you have changed anything in terms of your grip or the way you position your feet when you're serving or that kind of thing that might have helped improve your game?
Almost not at all. I've been so lucky and so blessed the way I was taught how to play tennis, and it's actually all thanks to my grandmother, because she was my first tennis coach and tennis teacher, and she taught me all the technique, and since then I haven't really changed much. Obviously, there are little things that you always try to improve, like trying to be aggressive, move your feet better, getting down more on the ball, or using the racket head better, and just the small details. But the basics of my technique, I haven't changed in years.
You beat Caroline Wozniacki at the French Open this mm-hmm. year. I think it was the first time you've beaten a current number one. But that's probably not the best win of your career. What would be the win you're most proud of in your career?
Probably Martina Hingis, the first time I won Indian Wells, because it was just so awesome. I mean, nobody expected me to do that, and I have had so much respect the way she played, and I always admire her. I remember watching her on TV, and then suddenly there I was playing the biggest final of my career, and the way I played, I really enjoyed it, and probably that was the best match ever.
Can I ask you about, how you would play three different players? What would be, I know you've had not too much success against Venus and Serena, but when you have to play Serena, what would be going through your mind before you go out on the court?
Well, actually now beating Venus in Eastbourne showed me that I can basically play against anybody. So when I go on the court, I'm really confident. It doesn't really matter who is on the other side of the court. So I don't make much of a difference who am I facing. It's more about me trying to focus on my game, which is being aggressive, trying to move well on the court, and going for my shots. I think that's been always the case of how I have to play.
I think all players get a little bit nervous at times on a court. What do you do when maybe you're not hitting out and not being as aggressive as you would like to be just because of the situation in the match, or you're a little bit nervous for some reason? How would you try to change that in the middle of a match?
Well, just trying to be mentally strong, using the experience that I've got now, and normally just coming back to basics, what I know that works for me, and just trying to focus on next point. That's all I can do.
Yeah. I think you turned pro in 1999. I was wondering, after all these years, how do you avoid tennis becoming boring for you?
Well, like I said at the beginning, this is something that I love doing so much that I guess it will never get boring for me. And I think it's a huge privilege, as long as I can be healthy and have fun on the court. I think it's the most beautiful sport to play. So I don't see the reason why I should get bored. And I feel like there's still so much room I can improve. And every time I go on the practice court, I always go there with a mission, trying to become a better player. And that's what keeps me going. The motivation is still high, and at the end of the day, that's all I want. That once I finish, I want to look back and can say that I've got no regrets, that I did all I could to become the best I can.
You were in the semifinals of the Australian Open in 2008, and I think you lost to Anna Ivanovic. Would you say that was the closest you've come so far to winning a Grand Slam, or was there another Grand Slam when you thought you had a decent chance?
For sure, there I felt like I had my chances. I was 8-0 up in the semis and was playing really well, although I feel like now I'm playing much better. But as far as the opportunity, yes, that was for sure the Grand Slam I should have won.
Yeah, and I guess you say you like playing on grass in Wimbledon the best, but obviously you would have settled for winning the Australian Open.
Yeah, I mean, any slam I take any day.
I know you played some piano when you were younger. Do you still play the classical piano at all?
Sometimes, when I have time. Obviously, there's not much time in my schedule, but yeah, when there's opportunity, I like to sit down and play a little. I unfortunately don't remember that much anymore, but it's something I would like to. I would like to come back much more when I finish playing.
How important is what you're wearing on the court? How much do you get involved in what you wear?
Well, obviously, I think every girl wants to look good. But once I'm on the court, I actually don't really think about that because I'm there to perform well and sport comes first. But obviously, once I'm off the court and people from Adidas ask my ideas, I always put my input in. But at the end of the day, of course, they are the ones that they choose the line. But I'm very proud of what I'm wearing. I think, you know, they make the clothes beautifully and it's a very feminine line, the one I'm playing in, and yeah, I'm just really proud to be part of them.
If I may say so, you're quite an attractive woman. I'm just wondering if some women aren't as attractive, maybe don't get as much attention. Do you think it's been a handicap or a help for you during your career, maybe being one of the more attractive women on the tour?
I think, of course, it's been always a help, you know. Knowing that the fans are behind me definitely helps me get through difficult times in the matches. And, you know, at the end of the day, that's what you want to play for, to share those great moments on the court with the fans. Because I think if you play in front of an empty crowd, it doesn't make the shots that you make so enjoyable. So, of course, I think it has helped a lot. But at the end of the day, I would like to be more known for the way I play. So.
I was going to ask you, if you did make an appearance in Sports Illustrated's swimsuit issue, are there any people who know you more for that than they do for your tennis? Do you
probably
meet people,
yeah,
when you're traveling?
Unfortunately, yeah. Obviously, that was a big thing to do, and it was great. I mean, it was a nice opportunity, and I really enjoyed that. But hopefully, like I said, they will more recognize me for my tennis.
And what do you enjoy most about actually just being out on the court hitting the tennis ball? What are the sort of the feel of the game that you appreciate the most?
You mean about tennis?
Yeah, just the feeling of hitting a ball or when you're moving well.
No, just like I said, I think about being able to share those great shots that you are able to hit once in a while with the fans. I think that's one of the most beautiful feelings, and I know that I will miss so much once I finish because I don't think you find that doing anything else. So I think that's that adrenaline that keeps you going and makes you wake up every day and trying to become better and better.
What match do you think you've played over your career? Like, I don't know, maybe on a center court at Wimbledon or somewhere really special at night when the crowd's going nuts. Is there one that you recall or a few that you recall when you just sort of get involved in it, like you're, I don't know, a performer on stage giving a concert or somebody doing what they do best in their profession?
I think every time I play on center court always brings the best out of me, and those are the matches that I always look for the most forward to. I remember when I was little, and sometimes they make me play, like, you know, the junior tournaments on the outside courts. I almost couldn't play at all, and my parents were like, well, what are you doing not playing? I was like, well, there's nobody watching, so why should I? So I guess it's been always in me, but I have to say probably Indian Wells center court always brings the best out of me, and sometimes watching the DVDs of my matches, I never realized how full the court was because I was just so into the game. And like once I'm on the court, I don't really realize how many people are there or whatever. But just being able to be on the center court brings the best.
I know that Roger Federer is one of the players you like the most.
Yeah.
How much can a woman player get from watching the men play?
Well, I mean, obviously, there's so much we can learn from them. Of course, they are on a different level as far as the fitness and the technique and the thinking on the court. So I try to learn from the men's game as much as I can. And obviously, having somebody like Roger to look up to, it's something very special. And I always enjoy watching him play.
I was looking over your record at the Rogers Cup, and I think the first time you played, you lost to Capriati, and then you lost to Mauresmo.
I remember that match. Yeah, I think it was actually a very, very good match. I was so close. I think like 7-4, 1-up or something, or even 5-1. And yeah, it was a good match then with Mauresmo as well. So I have great memories of playing in Canada, and obviously looking forward to come back very soon.
But I've looked at the last 6 years, probably except you lost to Hingis, I guess, in 2006 in Montreal. Your results haven't been as good, and you play very well usually at Indian Wells, which is very much the same surface. Any explanation why you haven't done better here in Canada?
Well, I don't know, but that's what I want to change this year. We're looking forward to come back, and I will give it my best for sure, and we'll see.
Yeah, and what do you enjoy most about playing on the hard courts when you have this swing heading into the U.S. Open?
Well, I do enjoy the physical part of it, that it gets really hot, and I think the more you work on the fitness, the more it's going to show up in the matches, and that part I enjoy, that gets really difficult and hot, and so hopefully we'll have those conditions in Toronto, and I don't know why I enjoy playing on hard, because even though I was growing up on clay, but yeah, I always have a great time during the summer, so hopefully it's going to be a good one this time too.
Well, Daniela Hentikova, thank you very much for being on the show. We look forward to seeing you in Toronto next week.
Yeah, pleasure. See you soon.
Daniela Hentikova, and we certainly do look forward to seeing her at the Rogers Cup next week here in Toronto. That's Tom Tebbit in conversation with Daniela. I'm Roger Lajoie. Questions for Tom are coming up. Roger at fan590.com. We already got a ton of questions, and we'll get them to Tom in our next segment. Plus, folks, another chance to win Rogers Cup tickets, and those Wilson Pro tennis balls are coming up with Tom's weekly trivia question. We'll announce last week's winner as well. Stick around. It's Aces on Sportsnet Radio, The Fan 590.
Like free sports tickets, trips, and memorabilia so you can trick your friends, colleagues, and mistresses into thinking that you're some sort of high roller? Hey, join the club.
Welcome to the club.
The Fan Club. Join online at fan590.com. Without tennis, we might not have the tennis dress. Another reason to celebrate the game. This is Aces with Roger Lajoie and Tom Tebbit of Tennis Canada. Sportsnet Radio. The Fan 590.
You're listening to Aces on Sportsnet Radio, The Fan 590. My name is Roger Lajoie. I'm in Toronto this week, and Tom Tebbit is in Montreal. We'll be both in Toronto next week as the Rogers Cup comes to the National Tennis Center, the Rexall Center, and what fun is it going to be? What a great tournament. What a great event. Sportsnet Radio, The Fan 590 will be all over it. We have prizes of tickets and Wilson tennis balls. That's coming up a little bit later. Stick around for that. Just a couple minutes from now, Tom will give you a new question. We'll announce our winner from last week. We've got some email questions that Tom is going to answer as well that have come in at roger@fan590.com. And this segment of Aces is brought to you by National Bank Financial Group. Need a smarter mortgage? All-in-one banking from National Bank gives you highly competitive mortgage rates plus a line of credit. For details, visit nbc.ca/all-in-one. Tom, let's talk about the Rogers Cup before we get to these questions. You talk about a fantastic event, the best players in the world here. Once again, are we in for a great week?
Yes, we are, Roger. I mean, we know we have the top 25 women entered in Toronto, and, of course, Serena Williams and Venus Williams as well, so it doesn't get any better than that. And this is a mandatory event for the men, too, so you've certainly got Federer, Nadal, Djokovic, and Murray, and everybody else. A couple of injuries. Ferrer won't be here. But really, it's they're both look fantastic. And I should put a little plug in for Tennis Canada now, because tomorrow the draws are being done for the two events. The one for Montreal will be at 4 o'clock, and for the 4 o'clock Eastern time, of course, and at 4:30 for the women in Toronto. And both of them will be on RogersCup.com, so they'll be live streamed. So there's a fair bit of excitement about that, because you've got Venus and Serena. I don't think, certainly Serena won't be seeded. Venus neither, I don't think, so they could come out against anybody in the first round. And somebody like Ernest Gobles here in Montreal, the guy who won the tournament in Los Angeles last weekend, he won't be seeded. So I don't think a Federer or Nadal would like to play him, you know, if he gets through his first round. So there's a lot of excitement. So anybody who wants to get on their computer can go to Rogers. Cup.com tomorrow and follow the draw, and like I said, should be very interesting.
Check it out for sure. All right, Tom, we got some questions for you, then you can throw out the trivia questions, see how many of these we can get through. Roger at fan590.com is email. Thanks so many of you responding on a weekly basis here, so let's see if we can raffle off a few here. Tom Coy says, does Tom think that Gaël Monfils will ever realize his full potential? He's one of the best pure athletes on the tour, possibly the best. but I've seen him play several times over the past years and haven't seen any significant development in his game, goes on. What do you think, Tom?
Well, Roger, it's funny. I think it was 2 years ago tonight I was here in Montreal, and I went and watched him. I was just wandering around. There was hardly anybody here. He was practicing with his coach, Roger Rashid, and he was hitting the ball as hard as you possibly can. It's like a couple of guys out there throwing haymakers just for fun. And then a couple of months later, or a couple of weeks later, it was at the U.S. Open, and he won the first set against Nadal, and I was sitting near the court, and he was just doing the same thing, which is unheard of, because players just don't go for things full blast all the time. And you could tell Nadal was shell-shocked into the second set, but, you know, finally Mofi's cooled off a little bit and didn't win that match. So I would have to say I think he's a sensational player. I just don't ever see it happening in a Grand Slam. He's a bit of a Harlem Globetrotter, fantastic to watch, has all the shots, a real performer, phenomenal athlete. But I just don't see it happening. I don't think he has the mental discipline. It's getting a bit late in the game for him.
Yeah, it sure is. Vinny emails in, "Hey, Rog and Tom, enjoying the program. Vinny, thank you so much. Do you think the other majors should adopt the U.S. Open rules and have an ultimate set tiebreak, or do you like the status quo?" Tom, what do you think?
I just like the lingering death, I think it's called, sort of thing, when you go on, you know, until somebody wins by two games. You've seen, I mean, was it 21-19, I remember, Roddick beat Elinaoui at the Australian Open. Obviously, Federer won the final at Wimbledon a couple years ago, 16-14. I just love that. It's just it's you have to break serve to win the match. But I'm happy with the U.S. Open. I think it's fine maybe to have a bit of variety.
Tom Tebbit, Roger Lajoie with you. It's Aces on Sportsnet Radio, the Fan 590. We're going through Tom's email bag here at roger@fan590.com with some questions. And in moments, Tom's going to throw in a new question and another great chance to win tickets to the Rogers Cup. So listen in. The tournament's coming up next week here in Toronto. Brian's a regular listener, and Brian, thank you for your comments. Always appreciate it. Brian says, "I'm wondering why the net cord tension is not consistent at the various majors. At Wimbledon, they have the dead net cords where the ball will just trickle over the top if it clips the top of the net, where at the U.S. Open, there's more play off the net. Why the discrepancy? Shouldn't it be consistent, or is that just part of the different conditions at different majors?" That's a great question, Brian. Tom?
Well, it is an interesting question. I'm not 100% sure I know the answer, but I would suspect that it has something to do with where the net posts are planted. At Wimbledon, you put them in the earth. Obviously, it's a grass court. I don't think there's sort of a cement base there, so it's just secured as well as it can be into the ground under the grass. And same thing on the clay a little bit. Obviously, when you have the net posts at the Australian Open and U.S. Open on hard courts, you can sink them into cement and make them really firm, and then you can draw, obviously, the tension tighter. So I think that's why you have the tighter nets maybe at the Australian and the U.S. Open, and especially at Wimbledon in the ground like that. I just don't think you can get the net posts that secure, so you can't pull on them that hard. And the net posts actually at Wimbledon are made out of wood, so that might be another factor as well.
Interesting. Sarah emails in and has a question for Tom. Is there anyone in the history of the game, past or present, that you would pick to beat Serena Williams at her best in a best-of-three set match where one set is played on grass, one on clay, and one on hard courts? That's an interesting question. In other words, she the best player depending on the court. And with the way she played in Stanford, is she the favorite now to win the U.S. Open? Sarah, thank you. Tom?
She played great in Stanford, Roger. I mean, I just couldn't believe it. Right from the get-go in her matches, she was knocking off winners and scaring the hell out of her opponents. So it was very impressive. She played really well. That's a fascinating question. It's all speculation. I would think Martina Navratilova would be the obvious player to put up against her. And I think it might be 50-50. I mean, Serena's just a phenomenal athlete, and I don't think I've ever seen quite as intense a competitor. So I might even go with her to beat Navratilova.
Doug's a regular listener as well, and he's done a very nice thing, always emailing us. So, Doug, thanks so much. Then he asks, could it be possible for Mr. Tebbit to comment on how Rebecca Marino can go as far as the WTA seedings, perhaps the top 10 someday, he wonders. And, Tom, do you feel that Alexandra Wozniak can get better, like the top 30 she was seeded at one time, or do you think maybe her best days are behind her? What about those two?
Well, I was just checking. She won her match today in Vancouver, and she won a match last night against Laura Robson, the young, promising British player. Alexandra, I thought she's had some bad luck this spring. She qualified for the French. She qualified for Wimbledon. I thought she was playing very well. So I wouldn't underestimate her, certainly getting back into the top 50. She was as high as 21. I think top 40 is still possible. She's a wonderful striker of the ball. I think she's grown up a lot as a more mature attitude, so I wouldn't give up on her at all. And as far as Rebecca goes, I think her highest ranking is 39. Right now, she's, I think, back up to 41. And she lost this week, had a bit of a sciatic problem, I gathered, with during the match or something. But I think she's going to be okay for Toronto next week. I think maybe top 20 is where she'd go. I think top 10 might be a little bit hard. But the thing about Rebecca is she has a very aggressive game, and if she can really master her strokes, she's capable of knocking anybody off the court.
Now, Graham is in Montreal, where you are tonight, Tom, listening in and enjoying the show. Graham says, I heard the Rogers Cup next season will start the day after the 2012 Olympics. Will this adversely affect the fields that the tournaments in Toronto and Montreal can draw next year? And Graham really enjoyed the interview with Johnny Mack earlier as well. Graham, thanks for that. So did I. Tom, I wasn't aware of that. Is that the case?
Pretty well, Rog. Yeah, yeah. It's going to be a big problem. I mean, I don't know. You have to think that Roger Federer, the problem is not only that they go from the Olympics to here right away. The problem is the Olympic event is, of course, being played at Wimbledon on grass. So not only are you changing continents in just a couple of days, but, you know, the men will have, a bye in the first round, the top guys like Federer. But, I mean, it's hard to imagine Federer winning the gold medal on grass at Wimbledon at his age and then saying, you know, I'm going to fly across and, you know, play in Toronto. Not impossible, but unlikely. On the other hand, if he happened to lose, say, in the quarterfinals or something, I think he'd be in a real, real good mood to get over here and try to shake it off and get going for the U.S. Open. So there's various ways you can look at it, but obviously it's not an ideal situation having the Olympic singles events backing right onto our tournaments.
Mm. And finally, Donald emails in and says, does Tom think clay court events should have the Hawkeye replay technology? It's true the ball leaves a mark on clay, but I've noticed sometimes that the chair umpires occasionally have difficulty locating the correct mark, especially if the mark is on the far sideline, says Donald. Tom, what do you think of that?
Well, that's a hard one. You know, I think probably it should. I think it would be a good idea. But, you know, I've been to the French Open a lot of times, and I just love the charade of the umpire coming down and the linesman or the lineswoman, you know, looking for the mark, and then the crowd starts whistling and booing. And it's all part of the show. And I tell you that the French crowd loves to get involved. And if you have it sort of cut and dry, just having old Hawkeye there saying in and out, a lot of fun's going to be missed. So I'm not sure, you know, from the spectacle point of view, it might be fun not to have it, but obviously you want to try to get the calls right.
And that's the mailbox, roger@fan590.com. We take email questions for Tom on all of our shows here on Aces on Sportsnet Radio, the Fan 590. Tom and I will be with you for Aces the next two Thursdays as well, of course, while the Rogers Cup is in Toronto, and then the following Thursday to wrap it up. So stick around. Aces, a regular feature here on Sportsnet Radio, the Fan 590. We certainly want to pass along some congratulations. Charlotte Brooking was the winner of our trivia question last Aces show. Charlotte, congratulations. You take home the Rogers Cup tickets, those Wilson Pro tennis balls, that fantastic prize we have courtesy of Tennis Canada. And that leads us to tonight, as we have a new trivia question, of course. And Mr. Tebbett, it's up to you.
What if I can't come up with one?
Oh, man, I put too much pressure on you. I knew it.
Well, listen, I'll tell you, I've got another plug for tomorrow. Live streaming of the draws from Montreal and Toronto at RogersCup.com. And the men will be at 4 o'clock, the women will be at 4:30. And the women in Toronto will have no one else, I believe this is true, but Serena and Venus will be there for the draw. So in honor of that, the answer to this question is an even number. If you put Serena's total of Grand Slam titles and Venus' total of Grand Slam titles together, you get an even number. What is that even number?
Ooh, tough one. Tough one. There you have it. That's the question. Tom just gave it. What's the answer? Email roger@fan590.com. roger@fan590.com. Tom, what do they get?
The question is, if you put Serena's total of Grand Slam titles and Venus's total of Grand Slam titles together, what do we come up with?
All right. Serena and Venus's Grand Slam title total. Email in at roger@fan590.com. Tickets to the Rogers Cup, Wilson Pro Tennis Balls. We'll take all the correct entries, and we usually got a lot. So email in, give us your answer, and next week we'll announce the winner here on Aces on Sportsnet Radio, the Fan 590. Another chance for you to win that great prize. Coming up, Tom, we got about 2 minutes. Rogers Cup coming up. We talked about the women here, the men in Montreal. Any kind of worries at all about how this is all going to mingle together now we're doing the same week instead of what we've done consecutive back-to-back weeks in the past?
Well, it's certainly uncharted territory, Rog. I think they're going to do a really good job of having sort of a central desk for television, sort of going back and forth. And they're starting the evening matches here at 5:30 and in Toronto at 7, so they won't overlap for that first match. And then I think there'll be a second men's match after the women's match. So I think it's going to be fun. It's going to be really action-packed for television. It's sort of unfortunate we don't get the 2 weeks of exposure. But, a couple of people coming up to me today in Montreal, so I think, why are they playing together? Well, I mean, the tennis calendar is just, it's intractable. There's just nothing you can do with it. It's my biggest beef. I said many times, how can you just have two weeks between the French Open and Wimbledon? How can you make Nadal play two days later after winning the French Open on grass? It's just an example of how hard it is to change things. And obviously, because Cincinnati's men and women this year, we used to have that week for our women's tournament. So we've got the men and the women together, and we make the best of it. And I think it's really going to be fun. It's going to be interesting to see how things work out.
will be fun from a TV perspective as well. And, of course, Sportsnet Radio, the Fan 590, will have full coverage from here in Toronto. Tom will join us again next week, of course, on Aces Thursday night, 7 to 8. We welcome your emails, roger@fan590.com, for questions for Tom. And tonight's trivia question, that combined Grand Slam total, Serena and Venus, email in roger@fan590.com. And next week we'll announce the winner of that from among all the correct entries. Tom, a pleasure. Look forward to seeing you here at the Rogers Cup, and enjoy Montreal, my friend.
It won't be hard, Rog.
I bet you not. Thank you, Tom. Tom Tebbit, poor guy, is stuck in Montreal at the Rogers Cup. I'm Roger Lajoie. Our thanks go out to Derek Brandeo, our technical director, and to Matt Brown, our producer tonight on Aces on Sportsnet Radio, the Fan 590. Thanks to all of you for listening, especially to all of your emails. Really appreciate it. For Tom Tebbit, I'm Roger Lajoie. Have a great night, everybody. Soccer Show is coming up next. Plenty to come, and thanks to listening to Aces. We'll be back next Thursday between 7 and 8 on Sportsnet Radio, the Fan 590.